Konrad Adolf Göte Rynell var född den 14 november 1901 i Tingsryd, Småland och kom till Amerika 1922. Och det är idag den 26 april 1985, Minneapolis, Iowa.
Ja. Så Göte var så ditt riktiga namn då egentligen?
Ja, ja,
Konrad Göte.
Adolf Göte.
Adolf Göte.
Ja, det är det fullnamn.
Ja, men Göte, det gick inte så bra här utan...
No, they couldn't translate that, you know, to anything such, so I had to use Adolf på. Och, well, I fooled around a little bit, but I... About my initials and things, you see, because there's too many here. Anyway, I changed it.
Jaha.
In the first year. So,
you call it Konrad?
Konrad, yeah, that's what
Rynell.
You call me that, yeah.
Konrad Rynell.
Yeah, Konrad, yeah, yeah.
Och pappa heter Konrad, ja. Och mamma heter?
Matilda.
Matilda. Var hon född i Tingsryd också, eller?
No, kom från Kalmar län.
I Kalmar. Och vad heter hon som flicka?
Gustafsson, I think.
Jaha. Kalmar län. Och pappa, var han ifrån Tingsryd?
I don't know where he came from. He never told me. Mm. He talked about Sundsvall, so I think he was born up north.
Jaha, ja. Så han hade kommit ner till Småland.
Ja, well, ja. Yeah.
Och träffat din mamma och så hade gift sig. Och...
Well, so... they both were from out of town. Ja. They moved in. They started a level of 1900, a couple of years before I was born. You see, they built the railroad.
Jaha.
Is this what you want to know about?
Ja, det är intressant att se i början hur det...
Is that what you want to know?
Så jag vill reda på var de kom ifrån och hur de bosatte sig. Och vad arbetar pappa med då i Tingsryd? Har han köpt en idé?
Well, now... I don't know. I don't have to answer all these questions. You know, that's a long... I could write a book here, but I got in a pretty doggone thick one about my life. And I won't even touch half of it because it's too darn much. See,
but vi försöker att få lite grann utav det,
well,
så vi får bevara för eftervärlden.
I don't know much about my dad and mother, either one. I never saw my grandparents over there, either one of them, either four of them, see. But as I got it, my dad, they built this railroad from Wickwood to Tingsley, see. Okay. There already was a railroad from Tingsley to Runneby in Karlskrona, see, down to Blekinge Kustbana. They hang on by Runneby in Blekinge, see, on the coast. And he had a buddy by the name of Richter. And they used to get out to this town, Tingsley, just after the railroad opened up, see. And I think they had it because I saw some equipment that they were buying grain from the farmers, you know, and they tested it, you know, and analyzed the grain. And I don't know whether they dried it or what they did, but then they sold it back to the farmers. See? They were in the farmer with the farmers, see. Huh? And then they started to buy, but they split up before I was born.
Han hade slutat på järnvägen då?
Ja, det järnvägen var
färdigt. Det var färdigt.
Ja, But anyway, he didn't work. They didn't work on på järnvägen. See? But anyway, they called me Rynell and Richter this year. This young. Well, anyway, so they split up, and Richter went his way, and Dad stayed there. See, Stannade, see.
Han gifte sig då.
Yeah, well, I don't know where he met my mother. I don't know. He must have been around. He had a sister in Kalmar land, he probably was around there somewhere because my mother was born, I think, in up around not Elmerbo, by Örsjö in there, Nybro.
På vägen till Kalmar.
Yeah. See, so they met up there, I think. But anyway, they.
Och du var äldsta barnet då, född 1901.
Ja.
Hur många var ni i
familjen? Seven.
Sju stycken. Så hade pappa en gård då som ni kunde
försöka? I don't know. He probably had some money. He used to be around the tannery business and before he got down there and around. He was an expert on shoes, you know. He would buy about the whole family's shoes all the time. And boy, he knew when it was good letter and things like that. So he was in that business, I think, something connected with the letter business, something. Well, anyway, Dad stayed with that line, see, and started buying charcoal from the farmers and bark and wood. Now, there were probably the later years when he started handling cordwood. He was up at the First World War. That's when I think when he started. I was home then when we started handling cordwood.
The bark, no, that was for the tanning.
Yeah, the bark was for the tanning.
What kind of bark was from the gone or?
No. Well, we bought gone, ek, and birch. Björke in Småland, where we was used to predominating.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, but the bark in there.
Yeah, we took, farmers took off bark, and see, first they took off the outside, the neva, you know.
Yeah, neva, yeah.
And then they took the bark off, see.
Oh, so ni använde näven till någonting annat då?
Yeah, the näven, we sold that stuff. We bundled that, you know, and this big square is high, you know, and we sold that to we bought it from the farmers, you see, and then we checked up on it, you know, they put out the bad pieces, you know, and, you know, that curls up, you know, näven, when you take it off, see, by nature, see, we had to cut them off, you know, and get a packet straight, see, so they couldn't curl up, see, and we sold it too.
This is interesting. I gotta have this on here now. This is interesting. This is history, you know, when you're talking about stuff like this.
And that's
so, how old were you then when you started to help Dad with this bark business and neighbor and?
Well, I was 7, I guess. Or
7? You started?
He started me. And I helped him with all his business, see, like that, you know. Even go out and met the farmers, you know, half a mile from town. They crossed the railroad crossing, you know, and I could see them crossing there, see, and then they went around, and I met them close at the home, see. And we were two that were buying bark in town, and I caught them up there and told the farmers, come around this way, you know, come near in a wagon. Min far betala the högsta priset, see.
Ja. Så du hade reda på priser och sånt då?
Oh, yeah.
You got it.
I always helped me out in the warehouse, you know. We had thousands of tons, you know, in the warehouse out there. See, we was on this railroad, see. Uh-huh. Right at the edge of the yard, railroad yard, see. We had a spur coming up, see.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And so we, of course, well, two men or three could handle it, taking it in, weighing it up and things, you know, when they brought it in. But when we loaded out, we had to have more help, see.
Was there good business then?
It was good business.
And it was good for the farmers too then?
Yeah, sure.
Oh. Could they, when they took the never off now, the birch, did they cut a never birch tree down, or could it still survive if you took the never off?
No, they cut down the trees in the first place. Yeah, they
did.
Yeah, see, birds, Björke, they grow very fast.
Yes.
And another one will come out of the stump, see. Oh,
but you can take the never off and
No.
It won't work.
They kill them. No.
They kill them.
See?
And they were cut down.
Well, and here was another thing, but they did with the birds, you see, when the bark was off the tree, for charcoal, the wood raised in value, see, because the animal want charcoal, it's got to be bark free. There can't be any bark into the good charcoal, see. Mm-hmm. So then he turned right around and the farmer made his own charcoal out on the farm, and he bought that, see.
Oh, I see. You didn't make any charcoal then?
Well, we did later on.
Oh, you did?
We made, I made a lot of it.
Uh-huh. So you are trained to do that too then?
Oh, yeah.
To build up...
Well, we used two methods there, see. The farmer made it himself out there. You know how to make charcoal on the farm?
Well, not
they,
much.
Well, they gathered up the wood, you see, and they cut it in about probably 10 feet pieces, see. They put them up like a teepee.
Uh-huh.
And then when they start out, they had to put in about probably a foot square. a frame, wooden frame, see. So that's an open hole, clear down, see. You see what I mean? They made out of wood, you see, just like a cage or something like that, or a box. First, and they set that up. See.
And there's dry wood inside and say burns good.
Then they put the wood without bark on, if they're making that kind of charcoal. And put it in a teepee, probably a couple of carloads, you might say. Well, depends on how much they get. You probably make around, you know, probably.
And this teepee, now, is that dry wood or is it raw wood?
Well, it can be either one. No, that's dry, see, because when you take the bark off, they yield in the spring of the year, see.
So
it comes off easy when the sap is in the tree, you see. Then the bark and this thing comes on easy, off easy.
So when do you build this teepee?
They do it in the fall of the year, during the winter, see, when the wood is...
So they has dried then?
Well, they were dry, but they don't make any difference, though. They used to take longer, see. All it is there's more moisture in the wood. That's the only difference, see? Mm-hmm. So it takes probably takes a little more time. But what I started to say, they start this frame in the middle, which is high, is what they call it a mila.
Mila.
Mila, yeah. M-I-L-A. Then mila. Coal mila. And when they have all the wood packed up, round, they cover it with something. See,
about like this room then?
Oh yeah, something like that, see. Or around, see.
It looks like a centimeter.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know where I'm going to make.
So then, if your dad taught you how to do this then? Mm-hmm. To do this work, meal work?
Well, no,
Mila.
No. I don't know much about that because I used without watching them.
Oh, watching, I see.
Because I was too small for that. They were too risky business.
Well, it is risky
because they got to be airtight. See.
How do you do it?
There's something like dust. It's soot or something like that. If you ever had one Mila burned on this particular spot, they have to be cleared off, you know, out in the timbers. They make it closer out in the timbers, so you see they don't have to haul so far with the wood. Well, anyway, they put a fire right down in the middle, some kindling, see, something that'll burn anyway for 2 or 3 hours, a couple hours, good and heavy, see.
And then it spreads.
And then it spreads out, see. Just like if you start a fire against the wind, see, but the same thing, it spreads slowly, see. And of course the smoke first it comes out, you know, just like steam, you know, and things like that. And it got to be airtight, see. That's where the skill comes in. They have great big wooden clubs, you know. And they climb up on the sides on this, and as it burns underneath, the whole thing gets just goes to the outside, see, and they can't be too tight exactly. The smoke or the evaporation, the gases will come through the covers, see, so they come seep through, but they can't be air enough, you see, the whole thing will catch fire, see, and the dust that sometimes, see. But anyway, this keeps on burning from the middle, and as it burns, it packs down. Because the wood gets smaller, and they have to keep these clubs. So, you know, it almost take 2 men. You know, if the wind comes up, you better have 2 men ready there, see, because they might blow a hole, you know, underneath somewhere, see, and you lose the whole thing. They keep on clubbing it down, see, with this big club, see, and keep it tight, see.
This is dangerous business, though.
You don't.
You can't fall down in it.
You got to be up on top. Now, if you could break through there, you'd be gone. That's risky business.
And there's hot down there.
Oh, yeah, there's all one glow down there.
One glow.
What a hole. It's hot, too.
How do they finish it off now, when they know everything is finished?
Well, they can see when it comes out, you know, when it comes out at the end, you know. They can probably kick it. Peep in, you know, open up a little hole. So they know those guys. They're good, and they have it wouldn't, really, in a hillside, they have something dug in like a old-time cellar, you know, something like that, with wood over. See, they're there night and day. Now, that's one way they make coal, if you're charcoal.
Yes.
Now, when the war came on, It was a party. I don't know who owned it. I think it probably was from England. Well, anyway, they make it in a different way. They call it I don't know, the probably different name for the call. They use a different name for it. But that is so awful particular about this. See, we made coal with the bark on it too, you see. They were different. We made it out of, beside the bjork, we made it out of gran and fir, different kind of coal for different kind of uses. But what they call chimbrick over there, that's black. You know what they call it here? It belongs. Anyway, and that's made like a silo. Seen a silo on the farm? Mm-hmm. And of course, much wider. And they made a fireplace underneath, like you say, we have to see a silo. And they make a vault in the bottom thing, about probably 2.5 feet, you know, from the floor. See, they make a vault that holds the wood.
It was like a crate then on top there, or?
Made them out of brick, and that vault. But they got to hold the wood, see they? They piled the wood in there, but then when it comes to that, making that kind, all the charcoal, they have it probably in a meter, this was long pieces. Mm-hmm. And they piled that in there on the end, on top of this wall, see? The roof or something like that. And they piled the whole thing for and there's a wall like it on top. Mm-hmm. All right, they piled that full of wood. And that in that particular one, there couldn't be a knot hardly on it. And there couldn't be a piece of bark as big as a dollar or 50 cent piece. And that was that particular. And that was made, I shouldn't tell it because it really, I didn't know it at the time, and we were not in the war at the time, but anyway, a party in town owned this thing, and Dad bought it. Well, he probably rented them, I don't know. They had three on these silos, see. Well, anyway, they had to be so particular in there, but going to England, and they made crude. See? Oh,
for the war.
For the war.
It was the first war.
Before the First World War, see. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, we just had to, one guy had to stand and inspect it, see. So the farmer, you know, hadn't been careless or something like that, you know, run a knot or something like that and didn't take the bark off clean, you see. We had to throw that piece of wood off, see. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, that whole thing was, it took about 2-3 days to fill that up. About 2-3 men. Okay, then we closed the door, and there was a kind of a vent on top of this particular, where the wood was, see. Mm-hmm. And that was primitive, you know, you couldn't have anything because there was so many gases. And well, anyway, then we started fire underneath, between the ground and this bottom valve, see, bottom floor there, see. And started off with a big chimney, but I guess it's probably 100 feet over that thing. And that chimney high one there, it was a big one, it served for all these three silos we had in the ring, see. So either silo we were burning, see. They used the same big chimney. They could handle two at a time. Well, anyway, and we fired, see. We took all scrap stuff we had on, and we had bark, see. Laying an awful lot of barks because a whole lot of the bark wood was short of clean wood from the farmer, see. We bought wood, you see, and we had a draw knife, see, and it took the bark off, see. Well, that bark we used to fire underneath there, see. Mm-hmm. All right, we started firing there, and I said this went on top, where we fired probably for 2 or 3 days, and there was just steam. There was not any pressure on it, but there was a white. So come up, see, like all the moisture out of the wood came out first, see. And we fired this old thing. And that's where I came in. Me, the water. So you had to fire night and day, you see.
You were about 17, 18 then at the time?
No. I was much younger than that, see. We came in, you see, we could not, anybody could fire, see. Uh-huh. My brother and I guess I was probably by that time. See, there was right, well, it was
14,
before,
16.
Before the
16.
First World War.
Oh, well, it was before the war?
Yeah, it was before the war.
I see, so you were only...
Yeah, you see.
12, 13 then?
Something there. Well, it was before I was confirmed, I know that. Uh-huh. Anyway, I was in there, so I probably was 10. But anyway, we could fire, see, and we had to fire that all night. And we fired that thing. That's where we could do it. There was only time to fire to the steam or the moisture quit coming out, see. Well, all right, when that quit coming out of the, and they got into kind of greenish and yellow, you see, when the gases inside there, you see, started burning, see. Mm-hmm. Then we had changed this valve and got these gases down on the outside and let that down into the fireplace underneath, see.
Oh.
See? And closed up to go under air, see? So the gas from the wood inside, you know, you might say they were digging its own grave because the wood inside, you see, furnished the gas, you see, to make it hotter, see? And finish it cooling, making the charcoal. See?
But it was after the moisture was off?
Yeah, after the moisture was off.
So you had to watch this color of the smoke then?
Yeah. We were watching that, see? And when that thing, right when it was ready, we were going to make the changeover, see? We just got something, you know, like kindling or something that was fired real hard, see, for a couple hours, see? So really that old gas started coming out, see? And then we closed it off, see? And then they went in, see, and boy, then really, I tell you, things got hot, see. And they was very critical, and Dad wouldn't let us even be close by. We had a guys, you know, specialized in that, see. And because the pressure went so high, you know, we had, well, I don't know how hard it was, you know, didn't have any figures, but those high chimneys, when we started going in there, it got so hot that the flames was coming out of that 100-foot chimney. You can see it for miles at night, you know, high up, 25, 30 feet up. And everything gets awful high because this is terrific pressure, you know. There was railroad irons every foot and a half around these silos. Was railroad irons standing up and down and with a big iron round it on the outside, see, tied up, you see, they were heavy. The iron was probably half an inch thick, you know, about 2 feet wide. And the iron bands, see, to hold them from splitting and exploding, see. Mm-hmm. And they got so high, well, one night, Yo was laying there, and that, they had a guy laying right outside the door when that thing. And the door in the bottom, they were so warped, we couldn't hardly close it. It got so hot, the big iron door just warped.
So your dad was running an operation like this then?
Yeah.
So he was in all kind of businesses?
He was in it, see?
Oh.
And he was in business, you know, because I didn't know it. It was before the war, you know. He was buying this bark, you know. And some Germans came over, you know. This guy used to disguised, you know.
Oh.
And because Dad knew about it, but nobody else did, you know. They were headed down in Landskrona. That's on the coast, you know, down there. Some guys got in, you know. Beeble was the name. And they posed as a seed company, and they probably had it.
But they are still in the business?
No, they came in from Germany. The Germans came in, and they managed this deal, see, they wanted this bark, Bert's bark, in Germany, before the war, before the Kaiser, see. And Kaiser, and I think it was the Queen of Sweden at that time, you know, they were brothers and sisters, so they were in the king's family. Kaiser Wilhelm was. You might have to cut this out. I don't know.
No, this is sure. They were very close to related.
So we helped them night and day to prepare for the war.
And then England wanted powder.
Yeah, they wanted the charcoal.
Yeah. See? So Sweden was very important then, because
to both them, both
they
sides.
Could give them steel and powder and bark and everything.
Yeah, that's right. That line.
So your dad, he met the German buyers then, and the English buyers, and all of them.
Well, you know, I guess he met them, I guess.
He was a good businessman.
Oh yeah. Well, anyway, you want me to continue on this line?
This is history, yes. Do that, because it's interesting.
Well, he was buying this before he ever heard anything about the war coming on or anything like that. He was buying this this bark and charcoal, see? But he just extended that a little bit, see? And he got to be buyer or superintendent for the shipments, see, to Germany. So he went down around and several railroads down in Skåne and Småland, you know, and right down Småland, they're coming in all directions, see, small and narrow railroads, some of them. They had, I think, three widths down there. So he went up along these railroads and got in touch with the dealers, see. So he bought it from the dealers. See, and they all had to store it. And then he arranged when the ship came into Ronneby. He had orders to load the ship with his bark. He had a motorcycle. First guy in the motorcycle in the county, I guess, have a motorcycle. And he was going up and down to these places, even the shipping out, see, and he ordered in. First they got in space to empty cars, see, and then they ordered in and used an Indian and picked up all the cars from different levels, see, on that one particular day, see, over two or three days, see, so the ship didn't have to lay there too long, see, to load it, see. And these trains come in, you see, that particular day or week, see, and they loaded that ship direct into Germany, see. And he was ahead of that. So he had quite a job with him. When he was gone, and I guess I was 12. 13. I tried to ride that motorcycle, but by God, he had the instruction book and everything. When he was gone, sometimes he went on the railroad. See, he didn't always go on the motorcycle. It was where he couldn't go by the railroad. I tried to ride his motorcycle. And I could start it, but I couldn't find the gears on the thing. There was an Indian. But I went up the hill, you know. And the boys, my brothers and sisters and the neighbors, we pushed the motorcycle up on top of the hill, see? No gears, and we piled on two or three of them behind me, and I was steering, you know. We were going down the hill, see, on that motorcycle. And no Indian running, because we couldn't put in gear, but I figured out where the brakes were, see? So we all got a motorcycle, and the rest of the kid was lying, and so when we coming down.
What make was it? Was it an Indian?
Indian was the name of it.
Oh,
well,
the
big
handlebars and...
Oh, yeah, it was a real motorcycle. Those guys gave that to Dad, see, to so he could get around, see?
So he learned to drive it, and then...
He was selling sewing machines and tubs and stuff like that.
How was your dad now? Was he a fast-acting guy? Or
he was a little fellow.
Yeah? So was he a tall, big?
No, he was my size.
Oh, your size?
Yeah, but he was awfully. He was stout.
He was
you
fast.
Couldn't bend him fast.
Oh yeah.
You couldn't bend him, and he was. But him and I didn't get along so well. So.
How did he? He was good in arithmetic than in business. In other words, he was fast or close.
I guess he took care of the whole thing. Oh yeah. But when he was gone, you know, he switched that over to me a lot.
Well, you get older.
Yeah, well, I was probably 9-10 years old in there.
Huh?
When he was gone, boy, he put me, when he was Of course, there was not the busy season when he left. He always stayed home and things were a little busy, but when he was gone sometimes, you know, for a week, something like that, he turned it over to me.
So you had to take care of the customers?
Yeah, weighing it in, you see, and paying the money, figure out how much money they got supposed to have and things like that, and checking up that it was dried, you know, so it didn't mold or anything. You had to check on that, but that bar come into green, you know, it weighed too much and it molded, so you wouldn't be piled it up.
Well, yeah, but you were only 12 years old, or 12 years old. Did you dare to tell the farmers this bark is not good, you know, this?
You damn right.
Yeah. So you were in charge?
Yeah, I was in charge though, but they were pretty good. They didn't happen very often. But you had to, when you dumped out the first sack, we always checked it, see. But yeah, the head man, you see, helping, see, doing all the work, you see. Now, I was doing the weighing.
Well, they came in packing
in sacks? In sacks, yeah, like flour sacks. That's what they were using. Farmers bought it in that, you see. They were supposed to be, well, what they did, they took it in the barn, you know, see, and laid it on the floor, you know, where they were thrashing, you see. Mm-hmm. They have a thrashing floor there, and they call it a lugan.
Lugan, yeah.
Lugan. They put it in there, you see, because they didn't have any, cleaned that off, you see, and got that bark in big pieces sometimes, you know, in a big bundle, you know, they were probably long like this, you see.
But did you split the bundles open?
No, they laid it on the floor and let it dry, see. And then they went in and you walked on it, or had a club or something, see, so they could scoop it up with a shovel and put it in the sack, see.
Oh, I see.
That's where it came in, see.
Oh, I see. They were small pieces then.
Oh, yeah, the small pieces, see.
But you could smell it then if there was something
well,
bad.
You can see it. We could see it.
So how about now when Dad come home, did he scold you for being...
No, he never did. He was all late on that, see.
Did he praise you for doing a good job or?
No, he never praised either.
No. So there was.
And he was, well, in winter he got sick. And he was in the hospital in Requa off and on for 2-3 months in the winter. We operated on 17 times before they get his trouble. And he was laying there, because we had telephone.
What kind of trouble was that?
Well, he had gallbladder trouble of some kind, and so I don't know what it was. But there was something with his gallbladder, and he had an awful lot of trouble. But he called, we called up there, so to his bed, you know, his telephone by his bed, you know. And he had some of it, his business, came direct to the hospital, see. We just switched the address over there, and he told us what to do, you see. So I was, of course, in the winter, you know, we didn't have much to do. So we had over one man and sometimes two. But then we were doing a lot of shipping in the winter, you know, with the charcoal. We had, see, this charcoal that we made or bought went to somebody had 10 or 15 bags, you know, or sacks or something like 20, waiting, you know, the dressmakers, see. Had the old iron, see, before the electricity came, you see, they were feeding charcoal in it, see. Mm-hmm. See, that had to be high grade, see, so it wouldn't smoke up, see. If it was wood, they got to be all wood, see. The bark would make smoke, see. If it was bark on the charcoal, see, they're not going to do something in the bark if it's not off of there, and it's subject to heat, you see, the smells, and to make... Well, you see, that coal, when it gets to be charcoal, all the gases are burned out of it, see. And so they have they had a bellow, you know, that they blew on this charcoal, see, so they got hot in the iron when they pressed it close, see. Uh-huh. You say, you know, when you're pressing it close and you have a hot iron, now electricity, but they were using coal, the charcoal inside.
So that coal actually had to be handpicked then to be...
Yeah, sure, that's what... The
more expensive?
Well, that was particular, see, because you could... they had to be inside in a warm room in the winter, you know, and they smoked up the whole establishment, you see. If the bark was on the coal and that started burning, got hot in there, you see, that made an awful odor, you know, and it created the gas that was against it too. See, that was very.
And that smoke went right back to you if it was no good?
That's when we were selling it, see.
No.
So, see, we graded it, you see, and before we let it go out, see, by hand. We had a kind of a like a conveyor, you know, with a screen on it. So, you know, all the coal went over there, the small coal went through, you see, down the floor, you know, and the big pieces came down, because they weren't big pieces, see.
Oh, I see.
For the iron, see.
But they got to be the right type and the right...
Yes, right, see, because the bigger the better, see. You could be probably on 3-4 inches, you know, and an inch thick, see, if it was solid, good piece of coal. So we had to take care of that. It was all year round business. And they good. They went on, we sold that on, what would that be, Eftercog, COD, I guess. Yeah, the guy couldn't get it before he paid for it, see.
Oh, I see.
And we shipped, you know, and that had to be delivered, you see, down to the freight office, you know. Mm-hmm. And the money came in, you know, and we had to take care of the banking business, put that money in the bank, and things. I've been doing all those things.
Boy, you really had to start early.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah,
you know how to count then?
I know how to count money.
No calculators?
No, no. They had a machine and nothing.
Did you make any mistake at any time?
I don't think I made any mistake anything serious. Huh?
You know, when you're young like that, you have other things that place in your head, you know.
That's what Dad and I got into it, see. He wouldn't let me have my time at all. He wouldn't let me out of his sight, you might say.
He was going to groom you
he
in
was
his
gonna,
business.
He was awful, because I was the oldest one, see. And he was going to put me as a model, say, for the rest of the kids.
And there were other boys too then?
Oh, yeah. There was 5 years between me and the...
Oh, I see. So it took a long time before you get the helper then?
Yeah. He was 5 years between us two. And he... he wouldn't let me go out at all, you see, when I got up here and be 10, 12 years old, and I wanted to.
To be with the other boys?
With my buddies, see. Like sometimes after, on Saturdays, he made me work on Saturdays, see. I never, when we were home from school, you know, and things like that, you know. And he even beat me up right in front of the other guys out there. We'd done something wrong. That's a fact. We were playing in outside, and he said, "Come and help me." There was something about it. There was the hired hand. They were moving a scale. And so I was holding. We had a kind of a cart, you know, with a flat long rack on. They set it on there. See, well, I was holding that thing at the end, and they was behind the wheels. See. And I was holding it, you pushed it up with the handles, you see, and there was too much weight in the back, see, and I went up in the air, you know, and I got scared, and it was a long thing, you know, I got it 4 or 5 feet in the air, you know, and I just didn't come so sudden, you know. I let go, you see, and the scale fell down the ground. Ooh, man, that's when I got it beaten. You see, there was right in front of me, 4 or 5 of my buddies was out around there, see. They was after 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 7, 8 o'clock at night, you know, they were making a change, they were going to do something the next day, you know. And boy, he really embarrassed me, you know, I never live it down, see. Things like that, see, it's, bless his soul though, but he probably meant good by doing it. But,
no. But there was the custom of doing things like that.
That's right,
kids.
I suppose so. They,
every farm probably did the same thing.
Well, my dad, he was tough.
How about your mother now? Did she see it differently?
Oh, yeah. Money.
She was my...
Mother, she was my buddy, because if I got any money, I didn't give it to him. My mother and I had an account between us, see. Because I made some my heaven. I could make as much as 20 cents a day when I was taking a man's job. He paid me. By so many sacks.
20 cents a day, now that would be about...
well, at that time...
No.
Well, I don't know what would be here, no. There wouldn't be more than 5 cents here.
5 cents?
10 maybe.
I
five?
20 girls.
Oh,
I said, they were...
Something like that.
So could you keep that money for yourself?
Yeah. I got it.
And you were paid every week, or...?
Well, yeah, something like that, you know.
Oh, but you could keep that
money. I keep that money, see. for spending money or something like that.
But you never get the chance to spend it.
No, that's right, see? So
what did you do then? Did you save it up?
Well, okay, you know, right then, you know, of course, he was all right. I think he stuck in some money, but now the day I was born, I didn't know it for many, many, many years. My mother told me, she said that your dad, he got an account for you in the bank, you see? Because I was in the bank all the time, you know, we were doing banking, you know. And nobody told me, but anyway, I found out, see? And so I told him about it. Yeah, I said, I don't want you to take the money out, he said. And they were sitting there drawing 4%, if I remember right, you know, 4% interest, see? Same as the guy. So I started putting the money in there, see? Some of it. And so I stuck it in. So he was all right about that. He wanted to save your money, you see, and he wanted to raise your right. And that was all right. Not only that, but he was too strange. And he just...
So how did you... you went to school then in Tingsryd?
Yeah.
To the grammar school and...
Yeah.
Grade school and the whole thing.
Well, I went a little far than that. He put me, when it was slack, you know, and somebody come in, you know, I went to a bookkeeping school, you know, he put me in there.
So he actually wanted you to...
Yeah, he wanted me to learn.
Do it right.
Yeah, do it right. And sometimes they had some kind of a summer school day, you know, that we could go to, you know, the probably half a dozen of us, and he forced me, and they said, you go there, and that's that, but I wanted to an arts.
Did you like that?
Well, I didn't mind it, in a way, you know, they call it fortsetting school, no. That means the fortsetting after you, and
it was easy for you too?
Oh, yeah, I didn't have it, yeah, didn't make any trouble, see, so he was all right to try to give me these little short courses, you know, and get me brushed up, see.
You had to write well then?
Yeah. We had one guy, he came in from Redwood and stayed in town there, you know. And I was taking a course then, I remember. And they called it Hornscriever. Hornscriever, yeah. So they really got you to have he was going to teach us how to write, see. And it was a special point, you know, that was crooked. It looked like a crow's beak, you know. And you press that and you press down like that, boy, you give you, just like you printed, you know. It was the most pretty thing, you know. That was in that course, you know, and I kind of like that course. They're slow, you know, you can use, so I discarded it. I don't use them, but boy, that really, you know, that was in that course.
So you had to use that when you wrote in the books then later on?
Yeah, but when we... No, I'd be...
It has a book,
I could use it. You could use it in your bookkeeping. So yeah. We had double bookkeeping and all in that particular course, see. But they don't use that anymore, you know. They're single and that's not where...
But it worked well when you used it at that time.
Well, I never took any exams on it anyway. And we got grades. Only that probably got a little bit fatigued, you know, with his Edison Swedish, you know.
And then you went to Tingsryd kyrka for confirmation.
That's right.
For prästen, kyrkoherden.
Yeah.
Det är en stor kyrka där i Tingsryd.
Oh yeah, that's a stor kyrka. That's a big...
How many were you to be confirmed?
Well, I don't remember. We were way over 100. Oh, I forgot now how many it was, but I have, I don't know whether I got my pictures with me here or not. I don't think I took them along. I'm reading over there.
So when you met then a lot of kids there in the church for your confirmation and so on, was there anybody that said anything about America? Or how did you know about America?
Well, that's another long story. Well, I tried most anything, and I said to write a big book about the different pinches, different things I tried and I done. Well, anyway, Dad was in this business here, and I got a little bigger. This was after I was confirmed. And he was buying stuff from the farmers, far away from over there, two svenska mil, you know.
Ja.
They had about 15, between 15 and 20 English
miles.
No, that's long ways.
Ja.
But anyway.
So how were you handling the business now, with horse and wagon or?
Well, now that's what I'm coming to now. And he bought the charcoal from the farmers. Well, not that far from the station. These guys was in between Karlshamn and Växjö in here, in that sea. They either had to go or Tingsryd, see? And there were long ways to haul that stuff, see? And they cost a lot. They didn't have automobiles. They was almost too far for in a day, you know, for a team to go with a load to town, you know, come back home the same day, you see? But then especially, yeah, it was a long day. But anyway, so these people out there, made charcoal, see, and I know, anyway, they come in to Dad and said, all right, now I'll...
Kassett 1, sida 2, fortsättning på intervju med Conrad Reinell, Minneapolis, Iowa. Kassett 1, sida 2.
That's all right.
Well, how it started, I know Dad, he never been as lenient as he was at that time, I remember that. But I was low, we were shipping it out to Stockholm, we were shipping out the cordwood to fire in the furnace in Stockholm, because they couldn't get any coal, they was doing the war. We were cut out from the coal shipment, say, from England, we were getting coal from England. We didn't have enough even to run the factories. So I was loading. And we were three in the gang. Dad didn't have not all of them, he didn't have something to do with, but anyway, they had those carts, you know, and they loaded up the wood.
Scotch yard,
that's right what it was. And they loaded it up, hauled it up on the flat cart, see, and dumped it, see. And I was piling it up, see, on the flat cart, see. And we loaded about two cars like that a day, you know, and I think I made myself about $15-$20 on my part of it. I don't know what I'd get in the tour, I don't remember what for it, see, for loading it up for the other two guys. Well, anyway, here some guys come in and they say, Conny, he said, by golly, this is too damn much work for you. You ought to have a team. They said, by golly, and haul it in. Instead of going here and bending your back all day and work as hard, you can make more money if you had a team. But I didn't have any money, and I was on a horse costing $2,000. One horse at that time. So I found out that the government and the maneuvers, especially the artillery, they have a maneuver, see? Compulsory service over there, see? And I was in the connected with the fleet. But anyway, you go in for a year or so, whatever it calls for, and then you go back and compete or repeat every 2 years for the next 10 years, see, to brush up and even the first call, see, those first 10 years. But then, the second year, after 2 years, you go in and repeat, see. All right, when the artillery was pulled by horses, see, and they didn't have any radar or anything like that, see. So they had to have, they had a yearly eight horses to a gun, see. And now when the maneuvers came in, see, they needed twice as many horses, see, for 45 days. Well, there was farmers down in Skåne, I don't know who they were, but they had thousands of horses put together down in there, and they used to have these horses for these 45 days, since the government paid them enough that they could afford to do it, to furnish the double set of horses, see? Mm-hmm. So when these horses got back after the 45 days, they had to feed them to the next year. They was in November, no, September. September, from the 1st of October to the 15th of November, I think. Mm-hmm. That was the 45 days, mm-hmm. See? So the horses got back home.
Now, if you had your reputation and you could sign certain papers that you were alive, you can get these horses for nothing for the whole year except the 45 days.
See? How did you find out?
Well, I don't know. Somebody told me about it, see? So I told Dad. I said, "My gosh, now," I said, "let's get into business, see? I get the horses," I said, "and you furnish the harness and the wagons." And I said, I'll do all the hauling for you, free of charge, but in any other time, when you don't need it, need me," he said, "I'll get the profit, all of it, for the horses." And he agreed, and I was green, and I'm going on to see honey, and it was great smacking. It was in the winter time, and I was not around the gallops, it was cold. And I wasn't used to horses. We didn't have any farm or anything like that. I was all around them. I was crazy when the farmer got in, you know, petting these horses. I knew the horse's name for the farmers better than I did the farmers.
But you never took care of any?
No, I never took care. Well, he said, "Go and get him." So I got myself a suitcase and I had a strap over. So you got on the train. It took me a couple of days, you know. Had to change trains, you know, go down to Skåne. They were down by Houghton, down by Kristianstad down in Skåne. I said, "Sørsdala was one place I put them up." And by golly, I went down and got these horses. Took them home and got going. But boy, did I have a time with these horses, see. And of course, Dad wouldn't know. He wouldn't touch them. He wouldn't get close to the horse. So it was all up to me. And he fixed up a place, you know, where I could keep them. And the stalls and all that. And because, see, they don't drive these horses with the lines like we do. They only have eight, I said, and two horses hooked up with a tree that goes between the horses. They said they hold back. What do you call that thing they have in the middle? Between the whole team. But anyway, so these horses there, they can pull. All right, and they can hold back. That's just these two horses. They can hold back the cannon that was behind, see. And on the other three horses, a man was riding the left horse, see, and he controlled the horse. So three men riding on the horses, see, they controlled the six lead horses, see. They were just two and two and two. Well, they see a whole lot of these horses, see, and they couldn't hold back. So there was a break, big breaks on each little wheel, see. And one guy sitting over each wheel by the cannon, see. And those guys put together the three of the horses there, you know. And well, I don't know, probably even on all four of them, probably. I wasn't in that, never was in action, you know, which I don't know, probably were four horses, all four horses they controlled, see. And so when we went down the hill, you see, he used to give a sign to the guys on the wheels, you see, to hold back the brakes, see. And the horses were never guided from behind, a whole lot of them. Some of them were, but they weren't all broke, see. And those horses, you know, I had more trouble to teach these horses to hold back. And
so they were not trained on the farm in between either to behave to the...
What do you mean?
With regular reins. In other words, do
no, they? Well, they had a rein, yeah, they had reins on.
Yeah.
See, the guy was sitting on one horse, and then he had the reins on the one on the side there.
But they were not told to hold back.
No, they didn't have anything between them, see, to hold back. But see, there was just single trees, you know, and you know how it is, you see, chains up tree. And, but anyway, they told Dad, and we were out in the winter, sometimes my brother, you know, on Saturdays, he was with me. We were hauling in this wood to town, you know, and cold as the dickens, you know. And Dad, he found out about a lot of wood out in that country bucket that he owned, and he didn't know what was that before I got out there, because the neighbors told me something about what that wood was at. They knew what they were doing, you know, they're doing themselves. And I made a little money before I left home. Now, that was the biggest I was in, you see. And my brother was, he was 5 years younger than I, and And I think he took right over, see. And they, I don't think they got any more horses. But, except the ones we had, see. And I think Dad bought them. Because, well, Dad itself, go and get the horses was a big feat. And they were so darn long. The first time I was down to see, I followed the big roads and big railroads. Even up Elmholt and clear up to Alvastar up in there. And I wouldn't have to go see. I made this way, see, and they made a sharp turn down here to Tingsley, see.
Yes.
Well, I got wise, see, the next time I got these horses, see. And there was a whole gang that time that was going up there. I think there were 20 of us, see. They went down and got these horses, see. They helped me get the first horses. Because I didn't know you was what, see. But I got some good ones after that, see. I picked out small ones, see. Not the big Clydesdales, you know, because they'd break the legs, you know, the hills. I had the little ones, you know, the chunks, right? We called them chunks. They was Ardenna, I guess they were, you see, but they were all sizes, but you want to have small ones that were fast.
Yeah. Nordsvenska.
Yeah, that's right. Ardenna, I don't remember, you know, all the, but anyway, when I got them after that, instead of going up here, see, going down here, I took the map, see, and took a lineal, you know, and laid right from there to home, see. Then I took out from this town here, then I asked where's the next town, and where's the next town, see, and I went through timbers and pastures and over creeks. Went out right into through the farmer's farm, you see, instead of going right out.
Like the crow fly.
Yeah, that's right. That's the way I was going home, see. I saved 2 days going home, see. And then...
Well, didn't you run into trouble, though, with fences and... Yes, Gordar.
Well, I didn't go over them or open up for them any gate. There was always a little road, you know, back road, you know, probably used to... Timber Road, see, something like that. I was in on them, you see. And
how did you eat now on a trip like that?
I'll tell you what I had when I started out in this suitcase. I had a pound of butter, and you know what pulp is?
No. Blue pulp?
Blue pulp, yeah.
No.
That's exactly what I had. That? And the whole darn suitcase was full of blue pulp in pieces, but it's big round, like a big biscuits, you know.
Had you lingon there? Lingon?
Well, yeah, the probably was some...
Kröser?
Yeah, Krösnamos.
Krösnamos, so you had plenty to eat then?
Yeah, well, I'd stopped overnight, you see, with the farmers. They were...
Well, they treated you?
Oh, yeah, they treated me. And I got feed for the horses, see.
Oh, I see. Yeah, did you have to buy them then?
Oh, yeah, I had to buy the feed. See, I had money with me, see, uh-huh. So... To feed the horses, see, but I never fed them in the middle of the day. I just sort of got water. We kept on going.
So when you returned from Skåne, then you were in business?
Yeah.
Like by yourself, almost?
That's right. All up to me.
So what did your father say now? I mean, you actually did pretty good, though. Wasn't he proud of you to be your
well,
own?
I never had any trouble after that, see, on anything like that. He didn't dare, but getting a little bigger, you know, and he knew that I could ask, but I would get inside, I didn't take it, see.
How long did it take, though, before you could answer your own shots? In other words, you were listening to your father now for many years.
Well,
what to do and so on.
Well, I think
15, 16?
Three years. See, that happened when I got these horses. The war was still on. And I don't know how come. I guess I got mad about something. And... I think I was 16. I kept on for several years with these teams, and I saved up some money, and there was an amount of $1,000 about, see. Mm-hmm. And I had that in the bank, see. Well, anyway, Dad, he bought a couple of acres, see, when he bought a railroad track there, see, when he came in, when they built the railroad, see. And he sold that for improvements and things after that, see. But right across the street from us, see, was a Mairie, see. All right, they had your single guys in there. And they had steam in, you know, they had churns, you know, pasteurizers and things, you know. And I was small, you know, and inquisitive, you know. But all was in there, and they had three, four of them. And I got acquainted with these young guys in there, you know. And when I was very small. And there were three, I think it was three or four, Gnallin, Sandin,
whatever his name was. Well, anyway, they stayed there probably a year or so. These guys probably 6 months, you know. They were single and they lived right on top of the creamery, you see. They were smart, you know. And I was in there all the time. Boy, I liked that, see. Mm-hmm. And they said to me, by golly, you want like the kind of work? They just kidding me, you know. Yeah, boy, when I get big, you know, I'm going to like to do something like that, see. And lo and behold, I found, and Juan was in there. Warren Nelson was his name. And he married a girl from out in the country. And I knew the girl, because he was 5 or 6 years older than I was, but I knew her dad. And he married her. And she was in contact, and she moved to Scone with this guy. There was one of the guys that was running this Myri, you know, creamery. So, some reason, well, by the way, my mother was a midwife. She learned that while I grew up, see. And she went to Stockholm for 2 years and learned to be a midwife. Well, when I had these horses, see, sometimes bad weather, a guy that didn't have a team, he probably lived, like I said, 15 to 20 miles away. Mm-hmm. He called and got to the telephone. I probably had to go long ways to get a telephone, but anyway, he called in. We had some, you know, taxis, you know, with teams in town, you know, and those guys, he couldn't always get them, so he just called up my mother, you know, and I took her out, see, in the middle of the night, many a night. Well, whether we couldn't see the horses, because we only used these things, used one horse, and that's how. She found out, my mother, that this girl, where she was at, that married this Myris, see? I wrote a letter to that guy, see? Asked him, you know, if you remember me, see? But lo and behold, he was in the biggest Myri in Sweden, in Svalöv, Skåne. And they used apprentices there, see? You could get in there, you probably got 20 cents a day or something like a free and board room and everything, and you learn all the creamery business, see? And I wrote to me. She said, okay, she said, come on, Jette. So I said, forget about it, I'm going to be my arrest. And I think that, but that money was still in the bank. Well, anyway, so I went out and I started up from nothing. I think Dad gave me $5 bill down there. And it didn't cost me anything. And I stayed there for a year. And there was about 30 girls in there, mostly girls, and we were about 10 boys in there. We had to sign up for a year. And we went on every job in the place. There was the agreement. We do everything that came up. And even the girls had to go down and fire the boiler. Because they were always with one of us boys, because we were doing the little heavier work the boys were doing. But the girl said, the only boy and the girl were making the rounds in the 2 weeks on certain jobs, and they'd be the only giving a round pair, see.
So there was a school then to be a dairy operator?
You might say school, see. But there was not, I don't know, there was a Landstingsman owned the whole outfit, him and his 4 sons. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of farms around this town. And they started out with that, and we had an awful lot of business. We really, and I really liked it, but anyway, I stayed there for a year. And we didn't have a union. We tried to start a union, and I was ahead of it, but they cost me. And because they got in my recommendations, and they was in there all the way up.
How did you get those ideas? I mean, here you've been under your father.
I got loose.
As long as he could keep you, you didn't talk about unions.
No.
But then you came loose with all those 30 girls and you said, this is it now.
That's right.
So what did your father say about this move now from home?
He didn't like it? Well, he always said, if you don't, will obey your dad, you'll obey the... The drummer, he always said that. If you don't, you want to obey your dad, you're going to obey the drums. It means that you have the enlisted in the army of state. I say that's what he referred to, see. Oh. No, he didn't like it at all. And he didn't give me any support for it. I didn't care about it.
But I mean, you were old enough not to take over the business from your father.
Yeah.
You didn't have in your mind that
no
interest?
No, well, here's what happened. After that, when I came home that time, and then he was not very, well, he would talk and all that, but he was not very enthusiastic with me coming home. So I said, now, I asked Dad, I said, now, at this year now, it doesn't matter. He was getting older. And I said, do you want me to take over the business here or something like that? Well, no, he said, he didn't want to do that, he said.
No.
So I just went on the telephone and called the employment office. They had one in Uppsala. Up there, they almost took care of the whole United States, you know, in that line. It kind of exchanged, you know, for layers from this particular place.
I see.
See?
So you were supposed to go over here and to Lure or something, or?
No.
Oh, you mean first, you said United States, you meant Sweden?
Yeah, that's what I meant. Okay. Excuse me. Yeah. Well, anyway, so I just went up, and I had been home probably a couple of weeks then, taking things easy, you know, getting acquainted with it. I had a little brother when I came home.
Oh.
With 19 years. Between us.
Uh-huh.
I was the oldest, he was the youngest.
Youngest,
yeah. Anyway, he, we had a... So, I got a job right then. Oh. Apply in a week. And that was right outside Uppsala. And, of course, now, I was capable to take any job supposed to be, you see. I knew how to make cheese, how to dry milk, how to make butter, and do the other operations. Cheese is the most, but no expert, but I know how to do it, see. Mm-hmm. And so I was confident, see, and there was a scale. The big shots, you know, the big unions, you know, the owners of these creameries, see, they had a union, see, and they had a scale set up, second year, third year, fourth year, after you took this course, or your experience. See, they went by experience, see, and that thing. Well, I had a year, I could have even taken one at another head cheesemaker, but any cheese, see, and I got a little more money. See, and I took on as engineer to run the steam engine and fire the boiler, see, and clean up the machinery and take care of the machinery, keep the belts tight, you know, something like that. You know, they all had belts, you know, and shafts, you know, and you knew how to fire a boiler. And, emergencies and things like that, see, so I took for an engineer the second year, and I got up to outside Uppsala, about a mile and a half, I think it was from Uppsala, whatever, you know, and I was stayed there for quite a while, and I running that, and I liked it all the way through, see, then I quit there and went to another place in Sweden, closer to Stockholm. And I stayed there for 6 months, I think.
And there was also a mejeri?
Yeah, that's all. I stuck with that, see.
The first place now in Svalöv?
Yeah.
You said you got in trouble there with, you had union ideas.
Well, yeah.
Did they fire you or let you go? Or
no, well, they should have, I guess. Well, here's how that was, you see. We were three boys there together. And we changed over, but that night it happened. That week, we were three boys, and we had to take care of, we had to run to about midnight, you see, making, we dried the whey, see, there was experimenting, see, we would think, see, and we had a great big wide open, well, each tank was just about a half, big two tanks probably being here.
So. Well, you mean big vats?
Vats, see, and we used to evaporate that, you see, by sheer natural evaporation. And it taken an awful long time, see. We had to stir it up sometimes, you know. We keep on evaporating, see, to use the, the fat and the protein were taken out, you see, in the butter and the cheese, see, and it's the whey, you know, with the vassle, we call it. Yeah, see, and all there was the milk sugar, practically, left, all the sugar, see, out of the milk, see. So we had to boil out the water in the way, you see, and we had to stay at the midnight, see. And us three, we had to
we have to start about noon, and that'll be tied up anyway, and they're going to have to have help. One or two girls at night when we finished it up, they took off a lot of labor, so to keep on stirring it so they wouldn't burn up. Well, anyway, we had to stay home on that Sunday, and they took the whole darn crew to a dance. Away, you know, and they gave them two, three teams there, you know, and they had fixed up team wagons, they had special wagons, you know, with leaves around, you know, and piled full of about 15, 20 on each team, you know, way to Wednesday. And spent all the afternoon and all night over there, and we had to stay home and didn't get any time off in place of it, or extra pay or anything, see. And that's where I came in. And by golly, the next day, he said, by golly, it was sudden, we didn't negotiate anything. And he said, by golly, we're not going to agree. We don't get anything for that, and no compensation, and nobody ever said thank you for staying home and taking care of the fort, see. But these, everything else was done, you see, that afternoon. So the day out, it couldn't get away, see. We couldn't, see. Well, we should have had the day off to compensate for that, I thought. Be quick, too, and then go to work. And that was just on short notice. Boy, boy.
So you didn't get any work?
We didn't get to work that night. We said, no. We're not doing that, by golly, we got to have something.
And you didn't get any letter of recommendation either?
No. Boy, we got one and one, we all three, we got in the office, you know, and oh boy, they laid us alone. We could just send you home right now, they said. Could just prepare you for doing a trick like that. I said, well, we said, everybody else doing that, and we work extra. And I said, and a lot of old, whether they're engineers, they run night and day, you know, the conductors and the engineers got to be on that and all that. Well, they get paid for it, and they get a day off. We hadn't had, now that was, I've been there 3 months, and we never had a day off, not a single day, right, in 3 months that we had off. That's the God's truth. They said they worked us like slaves, see, because we had that contract, learning. We was just, we could do, but what we got from that, boy, we got a day off, mm-hmm. Or time off, and we worked. 10 or 12 hours. Us boys, we had to be in and all of it, you see. We had to fire in at 12 o'clock at night, you know, see. And the other guys on the other end, you see, that were making the what do you call it, mesos. The look of mesos, that's what they called it, that milk sugar.
Yeah.
And it looked like just like peanut butter, just the same thing. It looks like how it came out, see.
Was this the rule they had in most of businesses at that time, you know, to work the young people off?
Yeah, heck yes.
But you spoke up then?
I was one of them.
Was this the first time you, against your father, you never spoke against him?
No.
You never, would never do it? But here you found your chance this is it?
Yeah, I said, well, there was another guy, his dad was he was a fisherman and sea captain, I think, from the East Coast, close to opposite Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And he was pretty outspoken too, you know, him and I was, and in fact, the boss's nephew, he was in on it, by golly, he backed out. He got scared.
So how about union at that time? Were they?
There were no union.
No unions?
No union, whatever. No, we didn't have any back. See, but there was a lot of creameries, a lot smaller, you know, 25 miles away around or something like that, you know. They pricked up their ears. It's something good. We could have started a union, right?
Huh. You were not afraid to be blackballed, though? I mean,
I didn't.
You had no trouble up in Uppsala or anything like that?
No. Well, when they saw my recommendations, said we ignore that. They said they had to come and ask me after I got there. I didn't send that in, you see, when I applied for the job. See, but
you lost.
They came later on. They got them in the paper. They got in the manager's paper. That's what they got in on. See.
Oh, I see.
You know, our name got in that. See, they had blackmails, all right.
If you did a good job on the next job, they didn't care.
No.
Previous
employer. No, that's something union or not union, but even Sweden, if you have a good job or have a job, and you hire out for 6 months or something like that, they can't fire you. And it's got to be awfully bad. And you can't quit either unless there's emergency, see. Mm-hmm. But if you lose a job and you get a blackmail like that, they put it doggone hard to get a job, get back into it again. No, I didn't ever get fired. I learned a lot on these jobs. What I didn't do, you know, castrate pigs, you know, on these, some of these places, you know, and you helped out the manager. Oh. My God. I got along fine, but I never had any trouble.
So what kind of work did you take after the Uppsala?
Well, then I get in another mill plant, type of plant, a plant that made pasteurized milk, you see, for the bottles in Stockholm, see.
Oh, I see.
We did it wholesale, see.
So this was your line of work then?
Yeah, I stuck with that, see.
Oh.
And I stuck with, then, what happened, when I was in this place, it was up by Inchipuri, closer to Inchipping, in Uppsala, they called me in while I was in, by Uppsala, see, and I was in what they called Mönstrider, see. You went in and
for the service,
see. Mm-hmm. Which used to, they had to go back, you know, a year later, see. So I went in there, you know, there was in Uppsala, and they assigned me to the fleet in Stockholm, see.
And, the flottan?
Flottan, yeah. Stockholm, see, because I was in that territory, see. Mm-hmm. Now, he said, well, he comes here, I'm clear down Småland, allegedly. Well, he said, that's where you go. And, because you're in the district. If you were down in Småland, they had a line, see, from Jönköping there, you know, went right through from coast to coast, you see, in Sweden, see, and half over to Karlskrona, see. Well, I would be in England if I was home, see. And I'd been going away from home for 4 years at that time.
4 years.
So I said, well, I guess it's going to cost me like the dickens to get home from Stockholm and get back clear down to Södra Småland, see. So, and I used to have that. Well, I didn't have any time, anything set up, you know, in this particular place. I could get loose, you see. Because there was nothing, we made butter there a little bit, see, but nothing else, and we just shipped out the milk to, what was the name of the town? Eckelson, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And we hauled down the teams, you see, in the car, the way the car, I guess, was, you know, loaded in and hauled into Stockholm, see, with it. So I could quit, and things lacked up anyway, so I didn't have any trouble, so I used moved down below Smolensk and Glensen to Arneby. See, and I came into Småland, see. When time came, they were going to call me. They called me from Karlskrona, see. They got a free ride home because I couldn't get home from Karlskrona, you know, an hour and a half of train, see.
So you figured out there well?
Yeah, I figured it out. See, I had to save $50-$60 going home, see.
So you went?
All right. So I done my service. And I came home right before Christmas in 1922. And I hadn't been home. And when I came home, he said, Connor, he said, we can go into America. Come on, go along with us. I'm going to America. Well, I said, honey, I never thought of that. But I probably had a couple hundred dollars in my pocket. But the service, they don't pay you any money either, see? So I've been out of work, you know.
How did you get this idea about America now? Have you
well, okay,
to
that's what I'm coming to. So when I got home, you know, there were six guys there. Met them, you know, and we kind of fraternized around, you know, the wind. We're going to America. Come along with us. So I said, by golly, probably I can figure that out. See, so I went to Dad. I said, I'll go with you. I was ready to go. And those six guys was going to be going to Spain. So I went to Dad. I said, Dad, didn't I let you have some money here, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when I left home? You know, my mother really told me about this. You give it to him when you left home. Oh, hell, you put to use it. So she says, do you think he can dig it up? She didn't know. But anyway, so I went to him. I want that money there. But he dug it up.
Uh-huh.
And I went with those six guys. And
from Tingsryd, all of them?
From Tingsryd, all of them from same depot.
Do you remember what they...
Yes, I remember very well. Boy, there never been so many people down at that depot before or after, I don't believe. Because I knew everybody.
Who were they, those guys now? Do you remember the names?
I don't know. But anyway, I think it was... One of them was my... We went to school together all the way through. And... Two of them, or three, we were confirmed together because they were in the same county. And I think, I didn't know two or three of them, there were seven of them, so I forgot the names, all of them, because there was one of them, you see, that my buddies, we stuck together. And all the way through. See, we went to Duluth, Minnesota.
Oh, I see. But before we come to America now, what kind of work were they doing? Were they from farm, farm boys?
Yeah, let's see. One, two, three. Three were farmers. Well, another son, four of them were farmers, I think. One guy was, he helped loading railroad cars, you know, for a paper mill down there, or the logs and things. And the other guy, I think he was a... he's making furniture.
Oh, I see.
Furniture maker.
So they actually didn't have any job either at all?
No, nobody had a job in company, you know. But see, they had relatives, see, in America. Oh. And they've been in connection.
But you didn't have any?
No, I didn't have
nothing
any. I had relatives and I haven't written to me. I had a lot of cousins here, you see, because my mother had three sisters, you see, they were up in Montana.
So they had correspondence between their letters and so on?
No. I never had any correspondence. A guy in the bunch, he said, I know a guy over there, you know, in Minnesota. So he gave me his name, you know, and I kind of fussed a little bit, you know. I was going with a girl, you know, that winter, you know. And
home in the...
East Sweden, Tingsryd, you know.
Oh, yeah. You were not engaged or anything like
No, whatever. She was an operator. I got acquainted with a telephone operator, you know.
So you had to tell her that you were going to leave?
No. You're supposed to have, when you come to this country, a sponsor.
Yes.
That's the idea. Well, nobody ever sponsored me, and I didn't have any to sponsor me, you see. So I got it from this other buddy of mine. He had an uncle over there, see, and he was a bachelor, taking care of a city park in a little town, you know, about 50 miles away from Duluth. I got his name, see. This gal, telephone office, she gave me a blank telegraph. Blank, see. And I had her writing down, it says, come up this, on there. I'll be glad to see you come to this country anytime. And put his name on the meat. And I went to that damn
bitch. That was your passport to the United States.
Well, that's right. But they never asked me for it.
No?
Never looked for that, no.
But you were prepared.
Yeah, I was prepared for it.
So, who got the idea about Duluth?
Well,
this
guy, he was not so very far from Duluth over there somewhere, see? And there was another guy.
What town was it? Was it Victor...
Cloquet.
Cloquet, south of Duluth.
Yeah, that's right. Don't you get anything in here now?
That's a nice little town, though, it's sort of in the woods.
Yeah, it had burned 3 years before we got there.
Yeah. Oh, I see. 1923.
They had burned, I think, 3 years, and they took every house in town except the Catholic Church and all the factories down along the river. See, there was a big paper mill. And there were three big sawmills, and a box factory, toothpick factory, and something like that. See, and they was right along the riverbank. They saved that, see. So they were intact, but they used to build up kind of shanties, you know, shacks for the people to live in. And They hauled them out on the railroad train, but there was a tornado-like deal, you know, started a fire. And it was burned out of the timbers all around the town.
But before you go into this now, Conrad, here, you got the ticket then in Växjö, or?
Yeah, well, I had to go to Växjö. See, I had to work fast. See, they were going in April.
And did you have to write to the king for...
Yeah, that's right.
Also, you get permission to leave.
That's where I almost got into snag, too.
Oh.
When I come to the preachers, see, to, you know, the preachers take care of all that.
Kyrkoheden.
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah, that's right, see. And I had been gone long enough, so the ones that were there before, you know, him and I were buddies, you know, but the new one coming in there, see. And I came right out of the service, so I said, you know, told him who I was, you know. Huh? He said, and I said, I have a, can you give me my flitness betyge, whatever you call it, you know. Yeah, he said, some different things got to be done before that, see. So, like this, I said, so I had already had permission from the king, see. I knew how to do that, see.
Oh. You were in the business
Yeah,
before,
I was in the business before, and that tells you in your manual books, you say, too, you know, how to write a king, letter to the king, or if you want to write a letter, you know, to the general, you know, or admiral or something like that.
Yes,
it tells you who to send it to.
And you did it yourself?
I did it myself, see. So he said, well, he said, who did this? Because I did it. Yeah, he said, I used to do that, he said, for a fee. He stuck you for that $10, I found out. And he lost the $10. And I said, oh, said, here's my mother gonna get in trouble. I was afraid my mother's gonna get in trouble, see. Because she was an estate employee too, just like he was, see. But he had a great way over her, you see.
What was
the
she?
Preacher, no, she was a
midwife.
Midwife, see. She was on the state salary, see. But, that's how it happened. Well, he didn't say anything more about it, but I told Mother about it because I thought, my God, he might take it out on her. But he didn't.
You were probably the one of the few immigrants that wrote to the king, though. Not too many.
No. That's it. There was something like that, you know. He didn't let anybody. He had
so
a priority, it seemed, but get a little side money, see.
So he liked the immigrants, actually, that passed to them because
sure. Or anything, you know, anybody wants to.
He encouraged
put
people.
In an application, something like that, you know, they went to the preacher, you know. Then there was no lawyer hanging around, you know. Preacher, he was the chief.
What was his name? Was he Amishirkwira?
Yeah, well, I forgot him. I never got his name, see, because I did. That's the only time I saw him. And then like I said, he came in after I had left home, see. So I never got him. They wants to confirm me, you know. There was a young fella, Titzel, I think his name was something. I mean, him and I were buddy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how it was, you know. He had who's for her. You know those days.
Oh, you remember that?
Who's for her? But you know, everybody came in.
Yes.
And on.
Well, that was long before my time, but.
Yeah,
so you were.
Oh yeah, I went for who's for her, see, and Dad, you know, he was kind of persnickety about these things, you know, and he was right on the church board and all that sort of stuff, you know, and so he was gonna say, get me in this, you know, Dad. I said I don't want to go.
Well, you could refuse.
I could refuse to my dad. You didn't have to go, but there used to be a good citizen, you know. You had to take in your kids in there, see, because then they sat you on the bench, you know. And ask you and you about how much you know about religion, see? They drill you know, about the Old Testament, you know, because things like that. So I was mad in the first place. And by golly, if he didn't put me right up on the front bench, I was sitting. There were school benches, there were two.
How old were you at that time?
Well, there was...
Before confirmation?
Oh, yeah, that was before confirmation.
So, after you were confirmed, it was not that necessary for you to go then, or...?
No. There was just a small kids that were still going, see. See, we had 1 year religion every day.
So you...
School.
Yeah.
But then it was...
You were sitting on the first...
In the first, and then there was about a dozen kids, not very many in there, see, because we lived in town, we lived on a farm, see, and they had different places where they had these who's for her, see, and in the town, you know, for some reason, but anyway, So I didn't want to, I knew the answers, but I was mad, you know, so I didn't look. I was sitting looking down. I wasn't looking at the... It was a young fellow, and he was assistant to the preacher at that time, to the old church here and everything. He printed something out there. So he was conducting, you know, this Lucifer. So I was sitting down like this, you know, looking at me. When he was going to ask the questions, you see, I looked down, see? So he couldn't point me out. He didn't know my name, see? So I evaded a lot of the questions then. He knew it, that I was evading the questions, he said. And he said, "Now this question goes to you," he said. "That's it, that soul, see, you mean, the sleeping guy, see?" And I looked up. Yeah, you, he said, when I looked up, see? I figured he was getting me, see? So I used some sober, see? But that was a bad thing, you know, that he pointed me out.
Embarrassing.
Embarrassing, like nobody's business. Yeah. But he knew I was fibbing, see? So I answered a question. I have a number, see? So that settled him down, you know? But anyway, I was embarrassed, see? Oh. Kind of my dad forced me to go. That's right. What I was mad about, because it was my day off. I guess it was a Saturday, no school that day, you know? And I don't know how old I was. It was way before I was concerned.
You remember that incident?
Yeah, I remember that, yeah. And how I got embarrassed. But a couple of years later, I guess, I got to be confirmed, and he was still holding, he was giving some lessons, you know. We were going once a week, I think, for, you know, during the winter time, or twice, I guess. And we had meetings, you know, and exams, you know, in the soccer stand. We were there. Yeah.